Hi everyone, and welcome to 4Panel, the Geek Show's dedicated comics, manga, graphic literature, graphic novel podcast. My name's Rob, and joining me today is Andrew.
Hello.
How are you?
I don't know, that hello came out really weird. I think it was because it was quite enthusiastic, and I'm not used to enthusiasm. I don't trust it.
This is true. Hello Kitty, you definitely are not.
No, mainly because I am a human person.
Yes. Not a cartoon character who vaguely looks like a cat.
I mean, I'm glad, you know, that we've established this at the start of the show. For years, the listeners have been very confused.
Yep.
And it's just, it's good to finally have that out in the open.
Yep.
I am not, in fact, a cartoon cat.
Yes. So if you
see him, however, is literally a bear.
No, I'm not. That would be Tucky. He is bigger than me, after all. And hairier than me, after all.
You make a convincing argument.
Yes. Basically pointed out the two key factors of being a bear. Number one is big. Number two is hairy. There are two more factors. Number three, you know, they have sharp teeth and sharp nails. And number four, they tend to live in forests.
Well, that just sounds like you're describing my mother-in-law.
I'm not going there. I'm not going towards mother-in-law jokes.
It's not my fault I was temporarily possessed of the collective ghosts of every single 70s comedian.
I was going to say. Oh, so anyway, leaving the 70s comedians to one side, what's been happening in the world?
Things and stuff. Shall I get the bad news out of the way first?
Go on then.
Because this is news that I'm sure everyone is aware of, because it's kind of blown up all around the world, that director James Gunn, who did the first two Guardians of the Galaxy movies, has been fired from Disney.
Yeah, I heard about this.
Yeah, basically what's happened, if anyone doesn't know, is I'm not allowed to use scrolling. Turd stain. We'll use that one. A turd stain by the name of Mike Cernovich, who is basically, you know, kind of one of these alt-right Twitter bullies, dug up some pretty offensive jokes that James Gunn made back in 2010.
Yeah.
And basically got his cronies to kick up enough of a fuss that Disney decided to take action.
So he made some pretty crude jokes 10 years ago.
Oh, no, they are not. Like, because that is the thing, that the jokes that that James Gunn made were genuinely quite offensive. Like, I've seen some of them and they are bad.
Ah, right. Okay.
But I think the point is James Gunn himself, because this also came out like back when Disney hired him to direct the first Guardians film, which makes it all the more ridiculous.
So Disney knew about this, but still hired him to direct Guardians.
Yeah, because at that time he said, oh yes, you're right, these jokes are very offensive and in poor taste. I'm sorry, and I have grown as a person.
Yeah, which is what you tend to do over time and with experience. All you outright freaks. Is that allowed? Am I allowed to call them that?
Yeah, I think freaks is allowed.
I mean, I'm a card-carrying, you know, nerd. I've been called worse than that by outright freaks. Because I've noticed
freaks is too nice.
The thing is, I've noticed that the majority of outright freaks, they tend to be of the more, you know, popular in school, athletic persuasion, you know, the kind that we never really got on with in school.
Oh no. Have you not met the modern internet troll?
That's what I'm saying. A lot of them that I've seen, only on channels like Fox and CNN and that, I should say, right? So maybe they've chosen the more, the ones who are more pleasing to the eye.
That is, I mean, that's like a separate, I guess, within the umbrella term of alt-right, special sauce stains on a pair of discarded underpants.
Wastrels. Let's just go with wastrels.
But wastrels is too whimsical.
Ah, true. Wastrels are whimsical in general. That's why they're wastrels. Silk pants. What about silk pants?
Yeah, sure. Why not? but silk and pants seem like they'd be rather comfortable.
Yeah, true. This is true.
Why did we decide on no swearing in the show, Rob?
This is exactly the reason why, because it forces us to be creative.
But there's like a hilariously oversized Rolodex of insults I could use.
Well, use them, we'll just bleep.
Wait, no. In honor of James Gunn himself, turd blossoms.
Oh, yes. I like that.
So, yeah, but like the athletic ones tend to be the general alt-right, gun-wielding, Trumpian turd blossoms.
Yeah, this is what I mean. They tend to be the outdoorsy jock type who were like popular in school, that sort of thing.
Yeah, but
Trump supporters.
Yeah, but these guys, they are like the barnacles hanging on the underbottom of this rusty, run-down steamboat.
Hmm.
I mean, literally, one of the big reasons they seem to have done this is that James Gunn poo-pooed the DC movies.
What?
Yeah, and all the whiny incels didn't like it when you make fun of their angry Batman.
Batman's a psycho. He belongs in a mental institution. Joker knows this. That's why he goes out of his way to highlight the fact that Batman is just as crazy as he is. This has been a long-established plot point of the Batman stories.
I mean, again, incels.
So you call them incels? I just want to make a brain cell joke.
Oh, no. Rob, do you not know what an incel is?
I know what an incel is. It's just, when you call them incels, right, I want to make a brain cell joke because the word, if you say brain cells, it also includes the word incels, but has bra at the beginning.
Which is ironic, because they're never going to see one.
That's what I mean.
I mean, I think we've slam dunked that.
Unless they're like London gangster incels where they could walk around and call each other bra.
We've slam dunked it, Rob.
All right.
Now we're leaving the court.
All right, let's leave the court.
Because I think, let's talk about some good things instead.
Yeah, Disney, stupid. Disney, stupid for getting rid of James Gunn. You know, somebody already pointed out, Honest Trailers pointed out, keep the fruitcakes. They make good Marvel movies. Look at Taika Waititi. Do not get rid of him.
Yeah, so Disney, bad, but Warner Brothers, good?
Okay, this needs an explanation.
Because over the weekend, it was also at San Diego Comic-Con. So we got some first looks at a whole bunch of different things.
Oh, yes, yes, yes.
Including trailers for both Aquaman and Shazam.
Yep.
And in the plot twist to end all plot twists, yeah, those look like some good films.
Yeah. Number one, I called Shazam, right? What did I say? I said, you know, just looking at the picture and just thinking about the Shazam storylines, kind of think they're going to go the way of The Tick meets Tom Hanks's Big.
I mean, like, to be fair, I would hesitate to say you called it, because Big with superpowers is, like, just the objectively correct way to do Shazam.
Exactly. But the thing is, it's that goofiness of The Tick as well, which is one of the reasons I've always had a soft spot for Captain Marvel.
Yeah, he is, because he's a big red goofus.
Exactly. And so, you know, I called it. I'm not hesitating to be proud and pat myself on the back, which I have just done. Now I'm in pain. Ow.
That's good. That's good, Rob. Your suffering makes good content.
Why'd I do that?
Break yourself more.
Oh, that hurts.
Did you literally hit yourself in the back?
Yes, I injured myself. Oh, you thought I was putting it on.
You know, sometimes I wonder how this podcast can go on in terms of why has no one stopped us from doing this. Other times I wonder, how has this podcast gone on? Because how have we not just, like, managed to kill ourselves from general incidents?
Don't know. Back to Shazam. I love the design. I love the characters. The characters really are really working for me. I like Billy Batson.
I was slightly worried about the characters, because I know they're going for the more, like, recent version of Billy Batson.
Yeah.
Where he is kind of a bit more of a troubled teen, rather than just a nice boy.
Yeah. But the thing is, I like the way that I like that version of Billy Batson. I've got to say, it's a bit more realistic to me. You know?
Yeah, I think they've done a good job of balancing, you know, making him a bit more realistic and, you know, probably more of a complex character, because he's just nice all the time.
Yeah,
probably not a great foundation for a movie.
And
but also,
yeah,
he does seem to like have a lot of the heart and like the innate goodness that the character needs.
Yeah. But I love the guy who's playing Captain Marvel. That bit where in the trailer where he starts filming and he's just doing that stupid little dance before he punches the pillar.
Oh my god, Zachary Levi flossing, yes.
Yes. He's just brilliant. And then when he's walking down, charging people's phones, going, I'm a superhero, I'm a superhero. Your phone's charged, your phone's charged. Then telling everyone he's a superhero.
Because, I mean, to be fair, he is wearing a bright red suit with a lightning bolt on it.
Yep.
Just, ah, it's got colours, Rob.
I know.
Actual primary colours.
The red actually looks red.
Yeah, it's not just a dark brown.
And the yellow actually looks yellow, not this kind of jaundiced colour.
Because you can just see, like, brown and jaundiced Captain Marvel in your mind.
Well, it's not just that. I mean, when they did Man of Steel, the lettering, the yellows in it, they just look like the diseased eyeballs of an alcoholic who's on the verge of death.
That is a good colour.
Sorry, I don't know why. Do you know what it is? When I think of Man of Steel, I just immediately go dark.
On my planet, this symbol stands for hope. And this colour stands for jaundiced liver.
Yeah. So, are you saying you hope I have a jaundiced liver? Or you hope my jaundiced liver gets better? What is the message you're trying to tell me?
Also, so Superman, what's the red for then? Why, Lois, it's for this. Neck snap.
Oh, yes.
But no, I'm genuinely really excited for Shazam.
Yes.
It just looks very fun.
And I love the bit, the other bit I love, though, was, he says, say my name. And I immediately started sniggering when he said that. He's like, that's a stupid name. He's like, say it! So the spirit of of Captain Marvel is just as childish as Billy Batson.
Yeah. It's like, usually I'm a bit against, like, the whole superheroes finding the superhero thing ridiculous. But I like it because Shazam is a dumb name.
Yeah.
His name, Captain Marvel.
Yes. So, yeah. My one concern is if this movie is as fun and upbeat and boppy as we hope it's going to be, you know, and as goofy as we hope it's going to be, my worry is when they do the other one, you know, the one with The Rock. Where he plays Black Adam and that.
Yeah.
Because, you know, that one I reckon is going to go super, super, super dark and serious.
Yeah, I don't know. Let's just enjoy the nice Shazam movie for now.
Yes.
And assume that Black Adam is never, ever going to get made like 90% of the other DC films that are planned.
So it's basically in that same room in Hollywood where they keep the New Mutants.
I mean, it's fine, the New Mutants is coming out.
It's like
sometime this century.
It's like superhero detention, isn't it? They got their own breakfast club and everything.
That is a film I would watch.
Superhero Breakfast Club.
Yes. Because like the New Mutants, then they don't want to socialise with the DC kids.
Yes.
But see, and then you've got the DC kids who don't want to socialise with the New Mutants. But even more, they definitely don't want to socialise with Cyborg, so they all join forces in the end anyway.
Yeah. But then
wants to be friends with Cyborg.
No, there is one who wants to be friends with Cyborg. He's the only one who understands Cyborg. After all, the two of them will form a new breed of comics where DC and Marvel unite in one magnificent coexistence. And I'm talking Vision.
Good for you, but I'm talking Aquaman.
Yes,
because yeah, that trailer came out as well, and it looks good.
Yes, it does. It does. It does. I was trying to set you up there, but you killed it.
Yeah, I know, because I'd already set up the other thing.
Yeah, true. But yeah, the thing is, we've known that... I forgot his name. Damn it. Guy who plays Aquaman. Carl Drogo.
Jason Momoa.
Yeah, we've known he's going to play a good Aquaman because we've already seen him play a good Aquaman.
It is, and like one of the few good bits of Justice League.
Yeah, and... I mean, you can just see Aquaman being, you know, part surfer, because why the hell not?
Yeah, it does remind me quite a bit of Thor Ragnarok.
Yeah.
Because they are both these kind of likeable dude bros going on a very bright, colourful adventure.
Now that you say that, now I want to see a version of Fear and Loathing, but starring Thor and Aquaman.
See, part of me still does kind of want the DC movies to bomb.
Yeah.
Just so that Jason Momoa instead of Aquaman gets hired by Marvel to play Hercules.
Oh, yes, yes.
And that's just him and Thor.
Yes.
Growing about. That's the best.
Yes, it would be the best.
Also the best. Black Manta's eye lasers look cool.
Yes. I love the costume for Black Manta. I've got to say, they really hit the mark with that.
Yeah, in a film trailer that involves laser beam sharks.
Yep.
Black Manta's costume is still the best thing. Yep. That's how good it is.
Yeah. And I mean, it looks like we haven't seen the best bits in the trailer, which I'm happy about as well. Just like with the Shazam trailer, it looks like there's a lot that we haven't seen that should be good. Could be good.
Yeah, I think Shazam looks like it's showing you basically like the first 20 minutes of the film.
Yeah.
Yeah, where it's like Billy Batson gets adopted, saves his foster brother from bullies, runs around to the subway, meets Shazam, gets turned into Captain Marvel, tests out his powers, has to fight Dr. Savannah, whereas Aquaman looks more like kind of a sizzle reel, but done in such a way that you can't really say, oh, okay, so obviously they're going to do this and then do this and then do that and then do that.
Yeah.
It's just, here is some stuff that looks cool. But yeah, those both look good.
Yes, they do. Yes, they do. Yes, they do. I just want to give a quick shout out to one trailer that we're not going to talk about, but the Godzilla to King of Monsters trailer.
Ah, yes. It's got King Ghidorah in it.
It's got Mothra and King Ghidorah.
And it's got freaking Rodan.
Rodan, Mothra, King Ghidorah. It's a festival of kaiju. And I loved every single second of the trailer. I watched it like 5 or 6 times, I'll admit.
Yeah, as well you should.
Because I wasn't the biggest fan of the first westernized Godzilla movie. And I'm not talking about the one from 1998 because he is no longer Godzilla. Hooray!
Yes, but they officially made that one not canon to Godzilla.
Yeah.
That's how much Toho hated it.
Yeah, in Godzilla Final Wars, they just called him Zilla.
And then Godzilla immediately just like pimp slapped him into the ocean.
Yes. The Godzilla movie with the Bryan Cranston Godzilla movie where he wanted to play Godzilla but wasn't allowed to.
Yeah, but as we have exclusively revealed in the past.
Yeah, we don't know if that's the truth, but we hope it is, because it's Bryan Cranston, so that's how we imagine him.
Yeah, but I like what they've done is they've basically said, okay, people are mad about the fact that there was not enough Godzilla and monsters fighting in the last one. So here's just Godzilla and a whole bunch of monsters fighting.
Yeah, and I think it was, with the first Transformers movie, when everyone was just kind of annoyed at the fact that there wasn't that much Optimus Prime action. Or Optimus Prime on Megatron action.
Yeah.
What they wanted.
God. Remember back in those crazy days when we were like, boy, I wish these live-action Transformers movies had more of the Transformers in them.
Yeah,
these horrific, jagged masses of metal.
We were so young and innocent then, weren't we?
No, the problem with this movie is that there aren't enough pointless explosions.
Yeah. But in the new Godzilla film, and they started calling them Titans, which is, I think, fair enough, because mythological Titans were a thing, apparently. Not saying real, but they were mythological.
Yeah, that's as good a name as any for them.
Yeah.
Also, is Ken Watanabe in that film?
Ken Watanabe, I don't think, is in this film, but...
I'm sure I saw him in the trailer.
What's his face?
I had some kind of, like, vast online resource that I could type his name into to find out.
Oh, yes. Well... we'll just have to hope. But what's his face is in there? What was his name? Tywin Lannister, the guy who plays him?
Oh, yeah, Charles Dance.
Charles Dance, yeah, saying, long live the king. And then it basically cuts to a scene of King Ghidorah flying into the sky, covered in smoke and fire and looking just absolutely amazing.
Also, I really hope in the movie he's actually just playing Tywin Lannister. And he just, like, walks in, says that one line, and then, like... someone just says, who are you? And then just leaves again.
Yes. No, I wanted to do that just in every movie from now on. Don't care who makes it. It could be in a Bollywood movie, during a dance number. He just walks on, says, long live the king, and walks off. Everyone's just in mid-dance.
Walks on, it says that, and then dances off.
Oh, yes, dances off. Everyone's just watching this... everyone's just in mid-dance just watching this bizarre scene happen, and the director keeps it in the film.
Oh, like But he's not a part of the script. He just walks onto set and says it.
Yes.
Okay, we should probably reel things back in to the actual remit of our show.
Yes.
So, next up in good things, freaking Chelsea Kane is back for Marvel.
Yes, yes, yes.
Better than that, she is writing a Vision miniseries.
Yes.
Specifically, a Vision miniseries that is going to be a direct sequel to Tom King and Gabriel Hernandez Walter's Vision series.
Which was amazing.
Yeah, like one of the greatest comics of like the last 5 years.
I'd go a bit further. I'd say the last, I'd say since 2000, of the last 20 years, I'd say one of the best comics.
Yeah, that's probably fair.
Because, I mean, you look at what they did with that Vision series and just the questions that they were asking in that series.
Yeah, like, was they in a mainstream superhero comic?
Yeah.
To actually go into like all these questions of what does it mean to be human?
Where's the line between robot and human? Where does sentience begin? And what is sentience?
And like, I think I have mentioned before on either this or one of our other shows, that is absolutely one of my favourite subgenres of science fiction.
Yeah. And so that Vision series was... The thing is, that Vision series is... it's one of those where it stops being pop culture and becomes actual literature, even though it doesn't seem like it on the surface because of all the bright colours.
I really want to reread it now.
I know.
I also need to read Mr. Miracle at some point, because that's supposed to be very good.
No, Mr. Miracle is amazing. You have to read Mr. Miracle. It's just, it's really good.
I know, but they still haven't released, like, the first trade.
No.
And I like my trades.
I know you do. I know you do. Hopefully, this new Chelsea Kane series will be released as a trade. Marvel. Still waiting for Mockingbird.
Oh, no, Mockingbird got released as a trade.
Did it?
Yeah. But it was super weird because it was like the first four issues plus like the sort of prequel comic and then the last two issues and a bunch of like random comics with Mockingbird in them.
But there was an eight issue series, wasn't it?
Was it? Oh yeah, I meant 1 to 6.
Ah, right, okay. Right.
I know how numbers work. I have a GCSE and does maths good.
Right, so Amazon Mockingbird.
I got a B for excellent.
See, you never told me the Mockingbird trades were done. You lied to me.
I mean, I already own all the issues.
So do I. But I want the trade as well. Because then the issues can stay in their pristine sleeves, you see. And then they can just be there on display.
That's a good argument.
It's a comic book argument.
It is a very comic book argument. Anyway. Yeah. This series is also going to have art by Mark Mohan and Aud Koch.
Yep.
I'm not familiar with either of those, but they probably do good art.
Probably. But did you know Chelsea Kane actually has a new series going on? And she is with Kate Namecheck as well.
Oh, yeah, for Image it's called Maneaters or something like that, isn't it?
Yes.
Which I am going to have to check that out.
I saw the cover of it. It's basically, it's got like cat's paws on the cover. I thought, I wonder.
I mean, look, I would buy it if it's just the lyrics to Nelly Furtado's Maneater reprinted over and over.
I've not heard that one. The only one that, the one that I remember is that one that is that old one from, I think, the late 80s. It goes, oh, here she comes. Watch out, boy, she'll chew you up.
See, what I like about our dynamic.
Yeah.
Is that I can make a very uncool old music reference.
And I'll just undo it.
Acknowledge that, yeah, you'll just make an older and even less cool one.
Basically, I just make you look good, don't I?
That's why I keep you around. Anyway, just to finish up, we have a few more little juicy news nugs. First up, writer Rob Williams has finished his script for... 2000 AD writer Rob Williams has finished a pilot script for Judge Dredd Mega City 1.
Ooh.
The thing that I think is maybe a spin-off to Dredd.
Okay.
Actually, even if it isn't, you damn well hire Carl Urban to play Judge Dredd.
Yes.
Do it. Just give me more of that. I need it. I need to snort it up my nose. Anyway, in other news of things that I need desperately... Netflix have picked up the live-action Lock and Key series.
Ooh.
for a 10-episode season.
10 episodes?
Yeah, that's a good, nice first chunk.
Nice.
Plus, also more importantly, it's Netflix doing like a fairly high-profile comic. So I think it's almost definitely like a surefire hit. And then there is just one last bit of news, because I feel like we haven't talked about this enough. So Robert De Niro is in talks to be part of Joaquin Phoenix's Joker movie. I say it's not his movie, it's Todd Phillips' movie. It's just Joaquin Phoenix as the Joker.
Sorry, what?
Yeah. This, I feel like this is a movie that like we keep seeing news stories about. And I don't, I at least, my mind just kind of glides over it because I can't really accept that this is a reality, that Joaquin Phoenix is going to be in an origin movie about the Joker. And even weirder, the character Robert De Niro is going to be playing is described as a talk show host who plays a part in driving Phoenix's character to become the Clown Prince of Crime. And I swear to God, if there is like a Joker origin starring Joaquin Phoenix, in which Robert De Niro is playing the freaking creeper, I don't know what I'll do, Rob.
See, all the way through you saying all of that, it sounded like you were on you were coming down from an acid trip.
Oh my God, is this some like weird meta experiment by Warner Brothers? Yeah, it's a Joker origin movie because we're all the Joker, and it's just going to become an increasingly insane production until we ourselves are driven mad just from knowing it.
I'm very confused now.
I'm overcome by the sudden urge to put on a purple suit and try and kill the Batman.
Sorry, I was talking with Mark and the rest of the guys from Keyframe earlier about Bleach and about the fact that Fairy Tail... Oh, just a bit of manga news. Fairy Tail didn't end. It has a sequel. Yeah, but we were saying that Bleach technically didn't end because they've got this new series called Burn the Witch, which made me think of, you know, Elmer Fudd going Kill the Wabbit to the tune of Ride the Valkyries.
Yeah.
And when you said that, all I could think of was Elmer Fudd's voice going, "Kill the Batman, kill the Batman."
I mean, we have had Batman versus Elmer Fudd.
Exactly, which I talked about.
But no, the big reason I included this is, Bob,
yeah?
You have quite strong feelings about the Joker.
Yes,
how
I do.
How do you feel about there being a Joker origin?
Joker origin movie, I can understand the desire to explain the Joker. I can understand that. That makes sense. That's a human thing. But that's applying humanistic standards to a character who really doesn't fall into any humanistic standards.
Yeah, I feel like that was kind of my train of thought. I feel like what makes the Joker a good character is that he doesn't seem human. I don't know if that's especially since Grant Morrison.
Yeah.
The idea that the Joker is actually maybe like the devil in human form.
Yeah, I mean, you don't try to explain a tidal wave or an earthquake or a volcano or a hurricane. You know how it happens, but the why of it, you know, why did this happen now? You don't know the reason. The Joker is exactly the same, and that's how I've always viewed them. I liked the fact that, you know, the Nolan film.
Yeah,
what I liked about
the Joker just like rocked up.
Yeah, I like the fact that Heath Ledger's Joker didn't have an origin story, didn't have any reason to be there, just was, and at the end of it, disappeared.
Yeah, although that wasn't entirely the film's choice.
Yeah, but you understand what I mean.
Yeah, because that's like what makes the Joker a good villain is just that he is who he is.
Yeah,
and I feel like he becomes a lot less terrifying once you can just go, oh, he's just a bloke who had a bit of a rough day and decided to put some clown makeup on.
Yeah. I know. What was it? Have you ever seen Michael Douglas film called Falling Down?
Yeah. Excellent. I feel like that's in theory sort of what the Joker's supposed to have gone through.
Well, the thing is, up until you start finding out about that character's history, right, I always thought that up until it started explaining why the character was like that, all the way up to that point, that was one of the best depictions of the Joker that I'd seen on screen, was the fact that this guy in a traffic jam just suddenly gets out of his car and walks away, right? No reason for it, no logic behind it. He gets guns, he starts killing people, no reason for it, no logic behind it. You know, he gets into an argument about the breakfast menu at a fast food joint, doesn't he?
Yeah. You know, I think that film would have been better if they didn't explain it, because I think that's what makes him kind of scary, is the idea that any of us could, you know, just snap.
Yeah. And I think it was in one of the, I think it was from a couple of last year or the year before, in one of the DC comics, was the idea that the Joker was basically, everybody.
Yeah, see, I like that, but I also feel it loses a lot of its power.
Yeah.
If partway through falling down, Michael Douglas stops, gets out a little makeup bag, starts just smearing white hair over his face.
Yeah.
Has a big lipstick smile.
Yeah. And starts his new life as a children's editor.
Well, just even starts his new life as, I'm going to be like a clown, but one that murders people.
Yeah.
See, I just don't see how you can do this film and not have it be incredibly goofy.
Yeah, well, you can't. I mean, the moment that it's going to be Joaquin Phoenix playing the Joker, isn't it?
Oh, yeah, and, like, he is a tremendous actor, but...
Yeah, the moment he stops to put makeup on, that's the moment that you lose that, you know, that suspension of disbelief goes, is that moment when... remember in The Crow, you know, the Brandon Lee film, The Crow?
I've never actually seen The Crow.
Okay, there's a scene in The Crow where he basically punches the mirror and then starts putting on makeup, and there's The Cure playing in the background, you know, and they're playing Burn. And then he starts playing a guitar, Lonely on the Roof, blah, 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 very sad.
The 90s.
Yes, I know. And I'm not saying Brandon Lee was the greatest actor in the world, but he was enjoyable, you know. And he was a great martial artist, obviously being the son of Bruce Lee. But the thing about that scene in The Crow was that they had to do the makeup to try and mask the fact that he'd already died during filming, right? And for certain odd scenes. But that whole bit suddenly stopped the movie being, you know, this fantastical superhero-esque experience, you see?
Yeah, and it just makes it seem a bit silly.
Yeah, it just suddenly became a guy running around hitting people to try and get revenge because, you know, his girlfriend died.
Yeah. And like with this, even if they go for like the properly old school, Joker falls in a vat of chemicals and like it turns his skin white.
Yeah.
That's still just, he is then just like a goofy slasher villain.
Oh, the best example of what we're talking about is actually Joel Schumacher, the Batman scene where you actually see them putting on the costume and it shows you the bat butt and the bat nipples.
Yes, exactly. It is basically once you see behind the curtain.
Yeah.
Like, it loses all it. Oh, it's like mystique and appeal.
Once you see Joker nipples, that's it. The mystery's gone.
Yeah, it's basically that, or something I think I mentioned on the Geek Show and Cinema Eclectica, where any Friday the 13th movie immediately becomes ridiculous once you imagine all the setup Jason has to do for his kills.
Oh, yes. Just how much work goes into actually stalking the prey in the first place.
Yeah. Because, like, he's 7 foot tall, a zombie, and wearing a hockey mask. How does he sneak about? He's, like, just hiding in a bush. like, popping his little hockey mask head out.
Is that what Sean Spice is going to do next?
Yes. I think that about does us for news.
Yes, it does.
I'm Christopher Sabat, the voice of Roanoa Zorro, and you're listening to The Geek Show on thegeekshow.co.uk. What up?
If you've been enjoying the show, then head over to our website, thegeekshow.co.uk, and check out some of our other shows. We also have reviews, and we have our Patreon and our shop on there as well, so check those out as well. If you want to support us, you can use our Patreon or our shop. If you want to catch up with all of our episodes, you'll find them on Apple Podcasts or the podcast provider of your choice.
Hello, do you like films? Well, wow, that's good. We're over the first hurdle. If you like films and you also like podcasts, you should probably check out the Geek Show's only dedicated movie podcast, Cinema Eclectica. Well staffed with a trained array of helper monkeys, we review all of the latest films every week and do it reasonably well.
Hi, I'm Dave from Geek Corner.
What you should do, if you like comics, is get yourselves along to our cool little comic book shop in Stockton-on-Tees in the Regency West Mall, where we stock a range of really cool independent comics. We actually have some really unique stuff that we are the only shop in the world to stock. You should definitely come along and check it out. Thanks very much, and get yourselves down to Stockton-on-Tees.
Welcome back to the show. Now we're going to be talking about what we've been reading. So, Rob, I hope you've been reading some comics, otherwise this is going to be a short section.
Yes, I have, actually. I've been reading Origin comics, and today I have two. I have Ant-Man, Astonishing Origins, and I have Wolverine, Savage Origins. One of them is red, one of them is yellow. So I think I'm going to start off with Wolverine, yeah? Because everybody likes Wolverine, don't they? Everybody likes Wolverine.
They do, but also counterpoint.
Yeah.
Those colours could be either of them.
This is true.
Hank has been known to, when he cannot hack it, he turns into a yellow jacket. Wolverine makes a lot of red.
Yes, he does.
So much red.
Yes. Sorry. I'm just remembering, The Shining. Red room.
Yeah, that's it. Danny Torrance actually just saw Wolverine. That's the entire plot of that film.
Yes. But anyway, so this is not Wolverine Origin, which is the other origin thing. This is Wolverine Savage Origins, which is it's by Ben Acker and Ben Blacker. Did I read that right? Yeah,
they're both called Ben. They do the... Or they did the Thrilling Adventure Hour podcast.
Yeah, Ben Acker and Ben Blacker, and with art by Salva Espin and Cam Smith. And this is actually not the Savage Origin. This is not actually Wolverine Origins, as in the birth of Wolverine, everything like that. This is set after Weapon X, when Logan is in Canada. And you know that song, Blame Canada? Well,
I mean, I'm too busy being stuck on the idea that, like, every superhero origin story just starts with a really graphic scene of conception.
Yes. No, it's not like that. But anyway, this starts off with a graphic scene of conception. No, it doesn't. It starts off with some deer, and they're drinking from the river and just looking doe-eyed at everything. See the joke I made there?
Well then,
only to find that Wolverine is fighting Wendigo for some reason. Nobody seems to know why, right? And Wendigo's doing his usual thing of shouting his attacks being Wendigo, because that seems to be the only thing that Wendigo can say. And Logan is basically getting scratched to death by Wendigo. They're fighting, only for... Wolverine to get carried downstream and picked up by a couple. One of them is a red-headed female who is a doctor. Her name is Heather Hudson, and she's basically taking a vacation in this cabin with her husband, James Hudson. Now, those names should be familiar to some of you.
For all you Alpha Flight fans out there.
Oh, yes, because James Hudson is working on an Iron Man-style suit. So, James and Heather, they work for a secret Canadian organization which was searching for their own Captain America-type super soldier, and now they've got access to Wolverine. And so the person in charge decides that she wants to try and do her own Weapon X-style program. Heather, on the other hand, wants to teach Wolverine the niceties of being in civilized society, and there's this amazing scene which I absolutely adore, of Wolverine's facial expressions, just concentrated on his facial expressions, as he tries to figure out which fork is for what on the dining table.
Okay, that's going to have to be my first problem with this book.
Yes.
Come on, Heather Hudson, no one knows that.
Exactly.
No one knows what the right fork is.
But anyway,
Yes.
Yes. Wolverine's got all sorts of problems, and he solves them in the way that he knows best, which is basically slice and dice. James turns up in his Iron Man-style suit of armour, Heather tells him off, and James and Logan, they don't get on. Heather teaches Wolverine Tai Chi and stuff like that. And then, yeah, there's all sorts of things. And then he accidentally attacks her, blah, blah, blah. Hulk gets involved, doesn't like Wolverine. Hulk versus Wendigo versus Wolverine is the ultimate upshot of this, which then gives birth to the yellow costume. What Wolverine doesn't know, though, is that his kind of foster brother, Sabretooth, has joined this little outfit as well. Anyway, it ends with Heather and James putting forward the idea of Alpha Flight and Wolverine meeting Charles Xavier. Hooray! We know where that leads. Then there's a second story towards the end of a kidnapped kid in Japan, and the kid's father... He's tried every single avenue, and the kid's father isn't a rich man. He's basically a chauffeur to a rich man.
I know this story.
Yeah, this is the one where everything's been set up by Hydra, and the ultimate upshot is Wolverine gets caught by Hydra. Cue various things happening.
Yeah, I know that's the being of enemy of the state.
Yes, it is.
So it's just that one issue that they have.
Of Enemy of the State, yeah.
That's kind of weird.
The rest of it is all about the kind... Thing is, this could have easily been Alpha Flight Savage Origins starring Wolverine. And I think that's my main problem with this. It's that it's not actually focused on Wolverine. It says Savage Origins, but it's not really Savage Origins. It's not really Savage anything. They just can't seem to, the two Bens just can't seem to decide whether they want to make this a comedy drama or an all, you know, balls to the wall action slugfest. And I think with Wolverine, you need to kind of make that decision, don't you?
Yeah, I was going to say, because like I said earlier, Akron and Black are known for the Thrilling Adventure Hour.
Yeah.
Which is like a comedy podcast.
Yeah.
That seems a bit strange that they would go for Mr. Serious Pants himself, Wolverine.
Yeah, I mean, like I said, this could easily be Alpha Flight Savage Origins starring Wolverine. And it's not particularly... I mean, a lot of it is focused on Wolverine's facial expressions, of which he has a remarkable number, so credit to the artists for that. But story is just kind of... It's kind of lackluster.
I mean, it seems like Alpha Flight Savage Origin is James and Heather saying, hey, but what if we were superheroes?
Yeah.
Well.
But with the early Alpha Flight stuff, Heather doesn't become a superhero until after James dies. But that was a long time ago.
Yeah. I forgot that like, she wasn't a superhero for ages.
No, but then her husband dies and she takes on the role of Vindicator, which I always thought was an odd name for a superhero.
I mean, unless like the last thing she said to James was, James, you get out of this suit. This instance is going to be the death of you. I swear to God. then Vindicator makes sense.
Exactly. Or if her superpower was being proven right.
Which seems like a pretty like over-the-top power.
Until you realise that the other side of that is that people can't believe that she's right in the first place. Run, the dam's going to break. Nah, I'll be fine. Everyone dies. See, I was right. I am the Vindicator.
Oh, and that's the, I guess, like, she can be right, but never about good things.
Exactly.
Like, it's always the, well, I bet this is going to go horribly.
My God, she would be the perfect spokesman for Dr. Pepper. What's the worst that could happen?
Like, that the house explodes. Rats crawl up from under the ground. The sky lights on fire. Dr. Pepper, what's the worst that could happen?
Exactly. Maybe that's the music that plays when Charles Dance does his Hollywood dance bomb.
God, this is that's the only thing that could make Charles Dance's constant cameos better. Yeah. Give me a healthy sip of Dr. Pepper.
Anyway, over to you.
Yep. So I have also been reading kind of an origin story.
Mm-hmm.
Because I've been reading Hellboy, The Complete Short Stories of Volume 1.
Ooh.
By Mike Mignola and others. Those others including Richard Corbin, Duncan Fegredo, Mike McMahon, Fabio Moon, Gabriel Barr, Dave Stewart, Matt Hollingsworth, James Sinclair, Clem Robbins, and Pat Russo.
Awesome.
So this is something Dark Horse are doing that I think is really cool. They're re-releasing all the Hellboy stuff, but like putting it in chronological order.
Ooh.
So the idea is that they put like all these short stories before like the main books, and instead of like how they were originally sort of jumping all about time, these ones are like they start in the early 1947 to say 1960 something.
Okay.
Yeah, this is probably not massively important, but yeah, it's basically it's watching Hellboy sort of grow up, become a BPRD field agent, and sort of gradually learn the ropes, which I think, you know, it's great because it gives you a whole new perspective on the character than just seeing all these like stories randomly plucked out of time like they were originally. Like, you actually get to see sort of Hellboy grow and develop.
Awesome. Does it have that magnificent scene that of Hellboy the first time he tries porridge?
Oh, you mean pancakes?
Oh, pancakes, that's it, yes. I knew it began with a P.
And, yes, it does, because that is canonically like the first Hellboy story.
Because that is just one of the best scenes ever in a comic book for me. Just...
Yeah, it's great, because it's just Hellboy going like, no, I don't want to have them, they're yucky. And they're just like, they're like, just going, come on, one bite. And then immediately just Hellboy going, hey, I love it.
And then the demons in hell.
Yeah, smash cut to hell. Everyone is screaming.
All is lost.
Yeah, but like the demon mammon saying, it is the boy. He has eaten the pancake. He will never come back to us now.
Oh, I still love that.
It is a great story. And they are all great stories, including like some of my personal favourites.
Is the chained coffin in there? Because that's one of my favourites.
Is the chained coffin? I think Chained Coffin is, you know, it's the Coffin Man that this one is. I think Chained Coffin is a bit later on.
Yeah, because the Chained Coffin is the one where he meets his mum, but he doesn't realise it's his mum.
Yeah, no, I think that's a lot later. That might be like the 1980s or something.
Mm.
But I think this one has some good stuff. It has The Iron Shoes, which is like one of the first Hellboy stories I read, and it's great. Because it's held by, like, fighting the demon Iron Boots.
Yes.
There's, like, an Irish goblin that runs around in massive, like, iron night shoes. And I just love the fact that Hellboy defeats him by, like, Iron Boots jumps at him. And he just moves out the way and there's a window behind him.
Yeah.
And I just love because it's such a dumb anticlimactic battle. And we also have what might be my favourite one, The Corpse, which is, it's another one of Hellboy in Ireland, where he has to go looking for a missing baby that's been kidnapped by the fairies.
Oh, I remember this one.
Yeah, and he finds them and they say, you know, we'll return the child, but only if you help us bury this guy. And so it's just like Hellboy trudging around through the night, like trying to find a church in which this dead body, that is of course still very chatty,
yeah,
can be buried. I like it. It's like, it's this weird mix of like really atmospheric. Like you've got bits where he goes into the church, like the first church, and thinks, oh, I'll just bury him here. And then you just hear all these booming voices. Well, I guess you see them because they're speech bubbles, but all these booming voices just going, no room. And like you see like various gravestones shuddering. Like it zooms in on a skeleton face just yelling, no room. It's super creepy.
Yep.
But then there's also a bit where the corpse loses an arm and Hellboy's just like, I mean, you don't really need it. Well, meanwhile, the corpse is like, but it's my arm.
I call him Mr. Fluffy.
And I also like it because he ends up having to fight this giant pig demon. But partway through the fight, kind of he thinks, oh, I know, I've got this medallion that works against like magical animals. This is roughly the same thing, so it'll probably work. And I like that even more in the context of this book, because you can kind of see him go from the very early stories of just, argh, monster, I've no idea what I'm doing, punch, punch, punch.
Yeah.
To, like, Hellboy's actually got some knowledge of this world and how to deal with it.
Yeah.
Which I think is really cool.
I always love the fact that even though he is Hellboy, he still had all those charms and talismans on him.
Yeah, because, I mean, he's basically like a magic exterminator.
Yeah.
Like, oh, what's that? Rat monster infestation. Best get the rune spray. And yeah, there's also a bunch of great stuff that I've got to read for the first time.
Awesome.
Like, they've got the entirety of Hellboy in Mexico, which is just amazingly mad.
Yes.
Because it starts with Hellboy teaming up with a bunch of vampire-fighting luchadors.
Have you not read this before?
I haven't read it before.
Oh. It's just... It's one of the most insane but amazing Hellboy stories.
It is, because it's Hellboy getting super drunk in Mexico.
Yeah.
And fighting and mostly failing to defeat monsters.
Do you remember that Simpsons episode where he eats the really hot pepper, the really hot chili, and starts hallucinating?
It's basically that.
Yes, but with demons.
Yeah, it's especially all the stuff with, like, the Coffin Man.
Yep.
Who's, like, this all-powerful collector of the dead. But Hellboy, still being young and experienced, is just like, nah, I reckon I can take him. And just gets his butt whooped twice.
Yep.
And the second time it gets turned into a chimpanzee. But it's just, it's a lot of fun. And I also like it because it shows you that this is like the more inexperienced Hellboy I was talking about.
Yeah.
Who just doesn't really know what he's doing. Just mostly going off luck and the fact that he has a big fist. Which, to be fair, is like still a lot of what latter-day Hellboy did.
Yeah, he just, you know, he tries other things first before he resorts to the big fist.
Yeah, and he also punches them with more of a knowledge of, hey, if I punch you here, it's going to hurt.
Yeah.
And I think I will just mention one more that I thought was really great, which is The Midnight Circus.
Oh.
Which is really good. It has art by Duncan Fegredo.
Yes.
And it's kind of set in the late 1940s. It's Hellboy, while he was still just a wee nipper, who basically runs away from the Institute one night to go see a circus. Like, it starts off just very, like, oh, it's going to be Hellboy getting into some lighthearted scrapes.
Hmm.
But there's this one amazing panel, because initially the story is drawn to look quite a lot like Mignola's work. But then there's just this bit of Hellboy kind of climbing over a ruined wall. And over that wall, you see the circus as just this big art style shift, this kind of really washed out sort of palette. And I love it because it really captures this idea that it's Hellboy getting sucked into another world.
Yeah. I mean, that Midnight Circus story, that there were two things when I read that that reminded me of. Number one was an old TV show called Carnival, which I think only had two seasons. I've mentioned it before. It's amazing, and I really wish they'd continued making it.
Yeah, I'm just like aware of Carnival in a periphery sense.
Mm. But the other thing was of a manga series by the creator of Ushio and Tora called Karakuri Circus, which is kind of puppets and horror and circuses and laughter.
Basically, a circus horror is just a real good scene for a horror.
Yeah.
And yeah. That's Hellboy, The Complete Short Stories, Volume 1.
Awesome.
I love it.
Awesome. I was looking forward to reading it. So, yeah, the other origin one that I've got is Ant-Man, Astonishing Origins, which is written by Tom DeFalco with art by Horatio Dominguez. And
that is a rad name.
Yep. This starts off with, in the same way, because I did the Ant-Man and Wasp prelude, right? And that kind of hit at this as well. It starts off with Hank Pym, and he's in Budapest, and he's going to meet his wife of 6 months. There's an explosion at the restaurant because he was running late because he was into his research, and she dies. He's getting therapy now, yada, yada, yada. He gets convinced by his dad, Warren Pym, to basically go work for this guy called Star on his shrinking formula. Hank doesn't want to, but everyone thinks he's suffering from really bad mental health issues because of his wife's death and survivor's guilt and everything. Hank, though, suspects that Star had something to do with his wife's death. And so this goes on with this Dr. Foster, if I remember rightly, and everyone kind of second-guessing Hank when Hank, in actual fact, apparently knows best. Blah, 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 continuing on, yada, yada, gets punched in the stomach, shrunk down to the size of an ant, and manages to escape from his captors. And then he becomes Ant-Man. This is how he becomes Ant-Man. And he communicates. His wife's technology had to do with communicating with insects and various other creatures using some kind of technology. I can't remember what it is. I'll be honest, the first Ant-Man story is all right. I wasn't really invested that much in it, though, because I read this.
Yeah, I think I can tell.
I read this. Thing is, it's kind of the... It doesn't really have anything other than genericism as its watchword. It's kind of the typical revenge plot. Oh, I must get revenge for my wife, and I suspect this person is the person who killed her or ordered her death. And even though he's being told that the person who he thinks ordered her death was actually in love with her and didn't order her death, he still thinks that that person did kill her. And that person steals his technology, copies it to make something to do with wasps and hornets, which is basically Yellow Jacket, isn't it?
Oh, the wasp, who cares? That's really disappointing, because there was a bit of that that I thought was like genuinely a really interesting hook for a story. Which is the idea of having Hank Pym have to deal with like his quite severe mental health issues in the wake of his wife's death.
Yes, and how he sought solace. See, if they'd done it that way, if they'd done Hank Pym seeking solace, you know, continuing his wife's work, right? So that they made it, so he might have developed the Pym particles, but the actual technology, the whole thing about insects, was something that his wife was into, you know? And so he continued her work alongside his own, and eventually he found a place for himself in a hive of ants. So, you know, in a colony of ants, sorry. Yeah?
And yeah, so, and I just think the idea that Hank Pym is someone who does struggle with a lot of, like, self-esteem and manic depressive issues.
Yeah.
Is what makes him an interesting character, rather than just, I am a man, what gets small?
Yeah, but if you had it so that the colony of ants that he associates with is kind of his support network then, do you see what I mean?
Yeah, like, they are basically support animals.
Yeah, and so he basically looks after them and they look after him because the colony looks after each other. And he finds a place for himself in the ant colony, which is why he decides to become Ant-Man. Not this whole kind of subpar revenge plot where, you know, he's up against some guy who basically wants to steal his research and technology, yada, 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 and how he doesn't trust anyone. He's going to be... and this is how cheesy this is, right? It ends with this. According to Edmund Burke, all that is necessary for the triumph of evil is for good men to do nothing. I'm through waiting for others to act. Done sitting on the sidelines. Justice can always depend on the Ant-Man.
God damn it, Tom DeFalco. This is why everyone hates Hank Pym.
But then it actually goes on...
Nothing.
Yeah. Then it actually goes on to the good Ant-Man, right? And this is the good Ant-Man where Hank Pym is basically... decided to become Yellow Jacket for a bit, and he's given everything over to Scott Lang. And Scott Lang is a much more interesting Ant-Man than Hank Pym ever was, right? Because Scott Lang has real problems. He's...
Yeah, and he has, like, a character.
Yeah. I mean, Scott Lang he's more stressed about... You know, he's less stressed about being Ant-Man. He's more stressed about the fact that he's divorced, he has a kid, and he loves his daughter... And he wants the best for his daughter, so he's struggling to be a good dad. But his wife knows that, in fact, pretty much everyone knows that he's Ant-Man. He wears his costume on the bus, right? So pretty much everyone knows that he's Ant-Man. And, you know, nobody bats an eyelid. But because he's Ant-Man, everybody kind of knows where he lives, including the bad guys. And so, bad guys being bad guys, his daughter could get pulled into the trouble. And so his ex-wife doesn't like that. Even though he has visitation rights and his daughter absolutely worships the ground he walks on. So yeah. He's got that whole baggage to deal with and he's trying the best he can. He's applied for a job to work with Tony Stark and through various things he gets to the interview and they do an assessment, everything like that. But while that's going on and while he's focusing on that, his ex-wife wants him to do other things, basically wants him to give up being Ant-Man. Which, to be honest, with his criminal record, he can't get any other job. He has to take security gigs as Ant-Man because that's the only thing that will get him a wage that he can use to try and pay child support for his daughter. You see?
I like Scott Lang. He's like basically the embodiment of the working class hero.
Yeah. Where Spider-Man used to be the embodiment of the working class hero, now it's Scott Lang. What I love about this, though, is the ending, is the decision that Scott Lang makes, because it's so human, his decision. You know, it's the kind of decision where that you have to applaud, and you look at his decision, what the decision he's forced to make by his ex-wife, by the way. You look at the decision he makes, and you look at the pros and cons of it, and he basically could have got his life back on track, but he chose something else, which effectively, you know, which technically means he's flushed his life down the toilet, but not necessarily so, because at least he's happy. And I have maximum respect for Scott Lang. Maximum respect.
Yeah, I think that's the first issue of Nick Spencer's Ant-Man series, isn't it?
If I remember rightly, it is. Give me a sec, I will check.
That is a very good series.
Yes, this is the first issue of Nick Spencer's series of Ant-Man, which, yeah, as you say, is a very good series. So, those are my origins. What you got?
Okay, I have got one last quick one we can do before the end of the show. I've got Star Wars Han Solo.
Ooh.
And it's going to be quick, because I can just describe it as, it's written by Marjorie Liu, right? It's Monstrous. In fact, it did by the Eisner Award-winning Marjorie Liu.
Okay.
Because she just won one this year for Monstrous.
Monstrous is a good series.
It is. With art by Mark Brooks, who does a lot of cover work for Marvel, and his covers are absolutely gorgeous.
Yep.
And they've written a 5-issue Han Solo miniseries, in which Han has to go on a mission to rescue a series of rebel spies from a bunch of planets. The only way he can get to those planets is taking place in the Dragon Void Run, the universe's most dangerous race. It's Star Wars Death Race, Rob.
This.
And also Han Solo has to pick up a bunch of spies, but one of them is a mole. Who is it?
Is it the one who looks like a mole? Please say it is.
No, sadly there is not one who is the giant mole.
There should be. This is Star Wars. This sounds amazing. Star Wars Death Race is just...
It's like, yeah, it's great. It's like, it's two of the best plots imaginable. Death Race and spy thriller, like, combined into one.
Oh, please say Luke turns up and Han Solo says, I've got a job for you, Luke. I want you to throw your hand into here, right? Set it to explode at this time.
Actually, no. There's not a single Luke Skywalker bit, but yeah. If only there was a reference to the literal hand grenade.
It's got to be either Darth Vader or Luke Skywalker for that.
But yeah, no, it is just insanely fun. And also, like, quite moving.
Okay.
Which I think Marjorie Liu is good at. Because there is also one of the races is kind of... The other important character in this is Louriano.
Okay.
He's like this sort of fish lady who's like the best racer in the galaxy.
Mm.
But she's also sort of the last of her species.
Okay.
And the idea is that her species sort of invented the Dragon Void Run because they grew up kind of learning how to all be isolationists. Well, not isolationists, they're hermits.
Yeah.
And like living on their own. And so they came up with this race sort of as a way for that entire species to bond together. And now she's like the last of her species. And she just wants to do this race one last time so that she can be close to her people.
That sounds fair enough.
It's fun and sad. Like, and it also does a good job of making this actually seem like an important story. Because it's not just Han Solo going off on a big adventure. Because it's like, it's set sort of just after the end of A New Hope. And this is sort of Han, he's stuck. So obviously, he's sort of got a reputation for helping the rebellion now. But part of him wants to just like leave that behind and go back to smuggling. But now smuggling just like doesn't have the same excitement it used to. And so he's sort of stuck between two worlds. He's got to decide which one he wants to choose. I think it does a good job of making it feel like this is an important part of Han Solo's story rather than just some sort of disposable adventure.
Awesome.
Which I think is what makes it really great.
Yep. That sounds amazing.
Yeah. And then there's also another 5-issue of Jason Aaron and Stuart Immonen's Star Wars series.
Hooray!
Yeah, which is good. It's basically the issue 8-12, which are the ones that introduce Sana Solo,
awesome.
Aka Han Solo's wife.
Yep. I've got a question, right? Do you think Darth Vader was basically that? Do you think he possibly, you know, imagine in a different Star Wars universe, Darth Vader said, you know, he cut off Luke's hand and said, Luke, I am your father. But maybe that was just his thing, because he also did cut off Mace Windu's arm, and then Mace Windu started screaming as he fell out the window. But in that intervening time, maybe Anakin Skywalker said to Mace Windu, so Mace, you remember that time that you were spying in Dantooine and you slept with that woman? Hello, Mace! And then Mace Windu falls out the window. Maybe Darth Vader's just trolling to mess with people's
Mace,
heads.
You are my father.
No. He basically, Mace, you are my husband. Luke, you are my son. Oh, sorry, Luke, I am your father. He cuts off a body part and then tells them something to troll them and mess with their heads.
I like that. So, like, Moff Tarkin, your taxes are overdue.
Yes. Oh, no. He cuts something off first and then says the taxes are overdue. You know, I don't know, Admiral Niet or whatever he is. I can't remember his name. You know, just says to, just basically, cuts off a finger and says, your grandma died.
But this is just how Darth Vader delivers bad news.
Yes.
If people would just stop jumping out of windows, he could explain. But see, now that you're distracted by the pain of losing a body part, the bad news doesn't seem so bad, does it?
Yeah. See, you know, when he froze Han Solo in carbonite, he was about to say, but Han Solo, you won the lottery. Your numbers came up, so you can now pay Jabba the Hutt.
You know he was working on some kind of line like, your numbers came up, but unfortunately, your number is also up, and he just never got a chance to say it.
Yeah.
And that's why he's so moody.
Sorry, I don't know why my brain went that way. It's just something you said while you were talking about Han Solo led me down that path.
But yeah, speaking of Han Solo, this is Red Series.
Awesome.
Like, the second one also has Gracchus the Hutt, who, like, imagine Jabba, but instead of, like, weak little spindly arms, he's ripped.
Yeah, I remember seeing a picture of Gracchus the Hutt, and I thought, yeah, it's a good thing he wasn't the one that Luke and the rest were up against in Return of the Jedi.
Oh yeah, because Luke does go up against him. He does not win.
Mm.
He does not win quite badly.
Yeah.
And yeah, just the art is fantastic. Because, I mean, like, Stuart Immonen. He's, like, one of the best artists in the biz.
Yes, he is.
And I think the thing that really struck me, that, like, both him and Mark Brooks get, apart from just love the art, is that, like, everything looks busy, which I think is, like, the key thing about Star Wars, is that it, like, there's, like, always people running around in the background, everything's kind of rusty and falling apart, there's, like, huge piles of things just scattered all over the place. It's like, that's the great thing about Star Wars, is everything looks like it's been used.
Yes.
And they do a really good job of carrying that over. Yeah, that's Han Solo. It's some good Star Wars comics.
Awesome. So, that's us for today then, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
So, we're going to see you all next time on 4Panel. Until then, I've been Rob.
And I've been Andrew.
And we'll see you all later.
Thanks for listening.
Oh, hey, what's up? I'm a superhero.